Hello, I'm Mark DeLuzio. Over the past century, our constitutional republic, grounded in the rule of law, has been transformed into a tyrannical democracy, orchestrated by unelected bureaucrats and globalists. The Constitution is now treated as a suggestion, not the law of the land. Welcome to the Constitution Solution, one podcast under God.
Hi, I'm Mark's co-host, Suzette Lawrence. Our intention is to explore the Constitution and discuss how our freedoms and constitutional rights are violated by those very politicians who took an oath on the Bible to uphold it. Learn how the Constitution is the solution to our country's problems. What do we need to do to restore our inalienable and enumerated rights? Class begins now.
Suzette Lawrence, how are you doing today?
You know, I'm doing really great. How are you?
Well, I don't know. The more we get into some of these episodes that you and I are working on, and the more we learn and the more we find out, the more depressed I become about the future of our country. But I'm Mark DeLuzio. This is the Constitution Solution, one podcast under God, and this is episode 26. And Suzette, we decided today we're going to do Federal Reserve 2. You did one on episode 25, Federal Reserve 1. It was a very nice intro that you did in terms of laying out what is this thing called the Federal Reserve, its history, when it was created, 1913, and you kind of laid out how it works, which was phenomenal. But I think we want to talk about some other things as it relates to Federal Reserve. And my suspicion is that we're probably going to have a half a dozen episodes at minimum on the Federal Reserve. What do you think?
And today, you know, we want to talk about inflation as just, and mainly because it's such a big issue for us right now, you mm-hmm. know, so we're kind of approaching this from a very practical position. You know, we're all dealing with inflation. If you're not sure of what inflation is, it's the cost of your gas going up, but the quality of your gas didn't change. But the price of your gas went up. So, for instance, if you buy a really cheap bottle of wine, you know, you expect to pay whatever the number is for that. But if you were buying a beautiful bottle of Montrachet, you know, from the vineyards of France, you know, then you would expect to pay more. So that wouldn't be inflation so much as it would be the addition because the higher cost because it's a higher quality product. We're paying the higher prices for the same product. And in some cases, they use something called shrinkflation. So shrinkflation is like you used to buy, a pound of peanut butter. You know, it was a 16-ounce jar. Now the jar is 12 ounces, but the price is the same. So you're paying more for that jar of peanut butter, even though it's still a jar of peanut butter. A lot of people don't even look at the jar. They don't notice the jar. They used to reduce it. Like you used not to be able to buy less than a pound of coffee. When I was younger, coffee always came in a 1 pound bag. And I remember when it went to 14 ounces, I didn't notice. It was pointed out to me.
Yeah, it happens everywhere. And you know, you got to think about this, right? That alone is, I think, a knee-jerk reaction by corporations who are continuing to pay more for taxes and regulations. They have to squeeze profits somewhere. And that is a methodology, albeit I believe it's quite frankly dishonest. It's what they do. But I want to go back, Suzette, you mentioned inflation. I want to go back to one of our earlier episodes. One of the first ones that we did was called Constitutional Economics. And one of the things that we talked about was the supply and demand curve. And we talked about what really is inflation. And again, like you said, a lot of people are going to say, hey, my prices at the grocery store went up by 30%. That's inflation. Well, that's actually a symptom or a result of inflation. And let's talk about what inflation really is. It's an expansion of the money supply, period. Okay.
Yes.
And a lot of people can't conceptualize the money supply like they could the supply of housing or the supply of automobiles or the supply of tomatoes, okay? And the fundamental principle is that if there's more of anything, it's going to per unit, it's going to be worth less for the most part. Okay. And I use this example with my grandson with baseball cards. You know, he's a big baseball fan. And I said, geez, you know, Adam, if there was only one Mickey Mantle baseball card versus a million Mickey Mantle baseball cards, which one would be worth more? Well, Poppy, he says, of course, if there was one, it would be worth a gazillion dollars. Okay. And I say, well,
that number's coming. That number's coming, Adam.
That's not too far off the way it's going, right? And and it's the same thing with anything. Think about any kind of produce. If there's a shortage because of a drought on any kind of, let's say, tomatoes or corn or whatever, the price is going to go up, okay? And that's just the bottom line. Now, let's just apply that same concept to money. The more money that we have in circulation in the marketplace, okay, it the less it's going to be worth. So let's just think about this. And by the way, because it's worth less, you have to spend more of those dollars to buy your groceries, to buy your gasoline, to buy your whatever, your automobile, your homes,
your
whatever.
Your house,
yeah. And so think about it. If you have $10,000 in the bank, Suzette, and let's just say you have a 9 or 10%, let's just say it's a 10% annual inflation, which, by the way, is what was recorded during Biden's administration during one of his years, which I think is way understated. That and if that $10,000 was stayed in your account, let's say it earned no interest, to keep that out of the equation, the buying power of that $10,000 after a year would be worth $9,000 at 10% inflation. So you'd have to now spend, you know, $10,000 to get $9,000 worth of goods. Well, and by the way, that $10,000 most likely is already taxed. So inflation is one of the worst taxes that you can have. So as you expand the money supply, okay, it's every dollar is worth less. Okay, that's just a simple supply and demand equation.
Mark, would you explain to everyone listening why inflation why it's called the hidden tax? You know, why is inflation called the hidden tax?
Well, you know, the example I just gave, that your $10,000 that you earned, you know, hard-earned money that you put away, is the buying power of that now is only, in my example, was worth $9,000, which means that, you know, whatever your take-home pay is has already been taxed, right? But now you have to face the fact that what's left over after all the deductions from your paycheck is going to have to work harder to buy what you normally would have bought a year ago. So you know, your dollar doesn't go as far. And that's just a plain, simple example where your prices, they say now the prices in the grocery store at minimum under the Biden administration has gone up around 30%. I think it's higher.
Yeah, they're printing. Ed Dow just reported that financier, just reported that the Fed is printing $1 trillion every 100 days. $1 trillion is getting added to the money supply. So our episode today is called Broken Promises. And would you share with people what was the original purpose of the Fed? So when they were like politicking to get the Federal Reserve Act passed back in 1913, against the consternation of every constitutional republic, law right. and order politician, and there weren't that many, right. Because politics has always kind of been tainted with the moneyed men. It's a way to get money, and they know that, not just for their constituency, but for themselves. Mm-hmm. So what was the promise of the Fed? Why have a central bank, a federal bank that in this case is privately held?
The initial purpose of the Federal Reserve Act in 1913, signed into law by Woody Wilson, your buddy, was to make a bunch of rich guys richer. Oh, I'm sorry. I shouldn't have said that. Okay. Okay. Let me go to the official reason.
The official purpose.
We're going to get kicked off YouTube now. Okay. The official purpose of the Federal Reserve is to stabilize the economy and facilitate growth in the economy, which means employment, security, all that good stuff. Keep prices low.
And low inflation.
Low inflation.
Inflation.
Okay.
Like,
okay. That was
low level. And to smooth out the business cycle, right? Like get rid of those boom and bust cycles, which they like kind of create. So
yeah, not kind of. I mean, yeah. Well,
they do create, you know, do create it. You know,
let me create this whole thing about the gold standard, okay? And I want to go back to.
But before we go there, because this will reflect it, because before the Federal Reserve, we were on a natural bimetal standard. Gold and silver was what people used to transact, which you'd been using all over the world. At that point, a consumer basket of goods purchased in 1790 cost $100 was in 1913, the year the Fed was
created,
cost $108. Okay, so during that entire time, 1790 to that's 123 years, the cost of goods went up $8.
And it went up, I think, because of the advances in productivity and all that, right?
Yes.
But yeah, okay. Essentially, it stayed flat.
it was a nominal change. In 2008, now this is the housing, the subprime housing crash, okay, 2008. That same basket of goods cost $2,422. So when we are talking about a broken promise, the reason we chose that name carefully is because the Fed is a private bank. They are not transparent. They have their public statements, blah, blah, blah. There are people there are so many economists that make their living trying to predict what the Fed's going to do. Why? Because the Fed doesn't tell you. You can't plan your family, your business, those expenses, because the Fed, it's all a big secret. You know, they do what they're going to do.
It's an unchecked bureaucracy that we have no visibility, no insight. And we'll get into some of the gory details here, but you're right, Suzette. In 2008, $2,422 for a basket of goods that was $108 in 1913, the year the Fed was created, and $100 in 1790. So, okay, let's ask, well, how the heck did that happen? Okay, well, let's go back to the supply and demand curve. Let's go back to the expansion of the money supply, which is the true definition of inflation. And by the way, our government is doing it all the time. When Biden wants to pass this COVID relief thing, or even Trump, when he did his $2.3 trillion, that all came from printed money that didn't exist, okay? And we'll talk more about the mechanics of that in a minute. But I want to go back, because a lot of people have a hard time putting their head around, why does currency devalue? Okay, and I'm going to give a very simple, hopefully a simple example. Back in the 1600s in England, okay, goldsmiths would hold all these gold deposits that people would own, okay? So let's just say, and I'm going to use some very simple math here. Let's just say that somebody owns $10,000 worth of gold, okay? That gold is going to be held at the goldsmith. The goldsmith would essentially give you a note that says, you own $10,000 of my gold stock in my gold reserves. Okay, great. Now, me as an owner of that note can use it as currency. So I can come to you, Suzette, and say, hey, I want to buy your horse. Okay, Well, how much is that? And we negotiate, and you say it's going to be, $500 of that $10,000, $500. So I could sign over to you $500 of my gold that I own. Now you have a note for $500. My note is now worth 9,500. Not a problem because it's backed up by the gold sitting at the goldsmith, or you can probably argue the goldsmith is analogous to a bank, okay, or the government. Okay, great. We still have $10,000 of currency, if you will, floating out in the economy. 9,500 now with the guy that originally had the note, and 500 for the guy that sold the horse. Okay, not a problem. Now the goldsmith says, hey, you know what? I'm going to issue another note to Joe Blow and charge a fee and interest and all that. So he says, okay, I'm going to issue another note of $10,000 and make somebody buy it, borrow it, and all that stuff. Now, all of a sudden, you've got $20,000 of notes, in other words, currency, in the marketplace, in the economy, only backed by $10,000 of gold in this goldsmith's reserve. That's what's going on today. Now, we abolished the gold standard. And Suzette, I think you and I said we're going to have a whole episode on the gold standard later. But I want to give people an idea of, well, how come that money is worthless now? Because it's not backed by $20,000 worth of gold. It's only backed by $10,000. So that the notes that the guys originally hold, the buying power of that now is only going to be worth half of what they originally had. Okay. I hope that's not, I know it's a little bit complicated, but try to get people to understand how their currency gets devalued. Okay. As one example.
So when the Federal Reserve Bank, when Congress asked the Federal Reserve for money, recently it was $61 billion for Ukraine to secure Ukraine's border,
Yeah.
to pay their unfunded liabilities, pensions, salaries, and to help pay for this war. And Congress said, no way. Now, what happened? There was a big battle in Congress. I think wasn't this the issue that got Kevin McCarthy kicked out when
Well, yeah,
this
he, I
started,
mean,
and we got a
he,
new guy.
yeah.
We got this Mike Johnson, this
Right.
Christian conservative from Louisiana, Republican conservative. He was in for all of 24 hours before he announced that, in fact, it wasn't going to be over 90 billion, not 61 anymore, over 90 billion that was going to be given or generated by the
Right.
Federal Reserve to fund this project that they had going on. Now, a lot of, and one of the big points they made in this speaks to the warfare economy that we are in right now and have been in for a long time. The US has been starting wars around the globe since Clinton. I think Clinton was the first person to like
I
just
think
start
you,
bombing a country.
I think you could probably argue since World War Wilson. That's when it started.
Well, but that's true, but I'm thinking of like back then they tried to pretend like we were at risk. But you
Yeah.
know, like that the Nazis were going to come to us or somebody was
Yeah.
going to attack us, the communists, you know, that was the whole purpose of NATO, you know, Russia's going to invade America. But in with the Clinton administration, that's the first time where they actually started like just bombing a country because they
Well,
wanted to separate the country.
let me stop you there for a minute. What I don't want to do is get into the military industrial. We have an episode on an episode
Well,
nine, but the point is, all of these spending bills, and 90 trillion is a drop in the bucket compared to the trillions that they ask them for, are unconstitutional. Most of them are unconstitutional spending. Okay.
Yeah, and that, but the Fed funds that. So the
No, they
Fed
fund it.
creates
Well, they funded
treasury
COVID.
bills
They come the COVID
and
relief. the COVID relief, $2.3 trillion, plus whatever else Biden, I think another $1.6 trillion that he did. So the bottom line is they create money out of nothing, right?
Yeah, so they're taking money out of thin. They're creating a treasury bill that's backed by nothing. It's created out of thin air. They put a cost on it, 5%. And then they buy that with the money that they created, because nobody wants, or very few people want treasury bills. Now, some people are buying them now because they're paying 5%, and it seems to be a safe place to put your dollars where other places aren't as regulated, because the Fed will probably be the last thing to go if the dollar fails.
Let me dummy this down for people who are listening here, because not everybody is well versed in economics. Think about if you're sitting at home on a Saturday evening and you pull up your computer and you're able to generate money to put in your bank account, okay? And then go out and spend that money any way you want to spend it. That's what the Fed does, okay? So what they do is technically what they do and how we incur debt as a country, which is now up to $35 trillion, I believe, and rising, is that the Federal Reserve will electronically print money. They don't really print money, but that's what they call it. They create an entry into their ledger of, let's say, $1 trillion. Let's just use that as a number. They take that $1 trillion and they buy government treasury bills. And now the government has $1 trillion to spend, mostly unconstitutional, as soon as that said, for all kinds of different reasons, right? Now, remember, politicians, their thing is like, hey, how much money can I bring back to my district, right? Because I want to get reelected, right? So they now the federal government has $1 trillion of debt, but they have the money to spend. And now the Fed has to pay the Federal Reserve back with interest. And the Federal Reserve makes all this money. Now, the crazy thing about this is the interest that gets paid back to the Federal Reserve, Suzette, will cover the cost, and anything above and beyond the cost of operating these Federal Reserves has to be given back to the government. Well, it hardly ever happens because, you know, you mentioned a janitor that got paid $160,000. They have 50.
And that was 30 years ago. 30 years ago.
Yeah. They have 50 corporate jets. I think I told you previously, I had a chance to visit the Federal Reserve in Cleveland. There's 12 of them, as you mentioned in your first episode. And there were people all over the place. They had a shooting range. They had more infrastructure there. And I could not believe the overhead required. I have no idea what these people do, okay? But there's no incentive at all. So if you think about how the Federal Reserve makes money, Suzette, there's no incentive to keep inflation down. As a matter of fact, what the Fed has done recently is raised interest rates. Well, who benefits from the raising of interest rates? The Federal Reserve. Because those are the rates that these T-bills got to get paid back with.
And it does a couple things. I want to go back to the secrecy, the broken promise and the secrecy at the Fed, because we don't really know what they're doing. The last near audit was 30 years ago by the government accounting office.
Yep.
At that time, they had 25,000 employees. They had 50 Learjets and cargo planes. They had a full-time curator that flew around the world buying stuff for them, you know, gold, art, sculpture. So they have this huge vault with all this stuff in it. They have hundreds of billions in assets. They have very lavish salaries and very high luxury buildings. You were at the Fed. You were talking about a shooting range, tons of people everywhere. And the salaries are very high. You know, probably the nicest thing I ever heard about the Fed was that the janitors about 30 years ago were earning $163,000 a year with a full benefit package. You know, that's a pretty nice gig if you can get it. But that's how they operate. Now, Ron Paul asked for an audit of the Fed. And this was, I think, in 2008. And that bill has been reintroduced by Thomas Massie. And this is just to ask, how much money do you have? What are your assets? Like, what's going on at the Fed? And that bill will not get passed, I guarantee you, because Congress knows that they know the game, you know, and it's not, it's a representation of the for the donor class, not for the population, which of course in a constitutional republic, you're looking at representation of the people, which we do
Right.
not have. So that's kind of let's address before we close, because let's talk about, did you want to add anything more to that about
Yeah,
it?
it's just that I think you and I were talking about this previously offline, and you mentioned that pretty much every economic collapse that we've had in this country in the last 100 years plus 1913, so let's call it 111 years, has been tied to the Federal Reserve and the federal government. Okay. And just to give you an example, when the Federal Reserve Act got passed in 1913, okay, the Federal Reserve doubled the money supply. Okay. And between 1914 and 1920, the consumer price index doubled. In other words, if you're paying a dollar at the grocery store for a loaf of bread, you're now paying $2, okay, or whatever it was. Okay, I don't know if that was that's not a correct number,
Closer
maybe,
to closer to a nickel back then.
yeah, okay. Well, it doubled. Okay,
Yeah.
it doubled. Okay, and
Right.
with that said, they created in that time, and by the way, this led to the 1920 stock market collapse. Okay, in 1920, which was really the real depression. All right. And unemployment went from 2.1 million, Suzette, to 4.9 million. Okay. Now let's just think about what the Federal Reserve is doing today. The Federal Reserve expanded the money supply drastically because of all this COVID stuff, the Ukraine stuff you talked about, and all these other glorified things that are going to save the world. And they expanded the money supply in the terms of trillions and trillions and trillions of dollars. Our debt now, our national debt is now 3.5, $35 trillion. It's probably higher than that as we're speaking, right? So let's think about that. The Federal Reserve created inflation, okay, by expanding, and they profit from inflation. There's absolutely zero reason why they would not want this, because that's how they all profit. These people who we don't even know who the owners really are, but. Okay, so they expand the money supply in terms of trillions. They create inflation. Then they say, oh, we have to quell inflation because our job is to make sure we have a stable economy. So they raise interest rates. They raise them over 7%. So a mortgage before Biden took office under Trump was sitting around 2.8%. It went up to like 7%, okay, for a mortgage. It basically just killed the housing market in terms of the middle class.
Yeah, let me just interject there. Keep in
Sure.
mind as you're listening, guys, that if you're it, this is a debt-based economy. Everyone is told that's in business that it's okay to borrow money to stay in business. Okay. So if you're borrowing money at 2 or 3%, or maybe 4% to keep your operation going, and
Right.
then that number starts creeping up, and now it's at 8%, you're not going to get projects done. There are a lot of people right now that aren't working. Their businesses are 48% of small businesses couldn't pay their rent, I think in March or April. And a lot of those people think they did something wrong.
Correct.
And this is the point I really, it's not you. You're not the problem. The problem is the Federal Reserve system. It's
You got it.
self-serving and it's designed to punish us, and it does. So keep that in mind as you're, don't be hard on yourself. Just realize, you know, just realize this isn't you. You are being victimized by it, but there are ways around it. And
And
we'll
it's hard
talk
to,
about
it's
that
not
in a
only,
future episode as well.
yeah, we will. It's a really good point you're making because and it's not always obvious, okay?
Oh, it's very
It's not
subtle.
them.
Nobody
Yeah.
talks about what's going
No.
wrong in business. People say, how are you doing? I don't say, oh man, you know, X, Y, and Z, blah, blah, blah. You know, I say, oh, things are great. But things aren't great, you know, from a business
Right,
standpoint.
right.
You know, think
Well,
if you had a
let's.
family and had to feed a family right now, and you
Good
all of a sudden
luck.
had to come up with 30% more money across the board, not just for groceries, but for gas. If you had one of
Just
those,
essentials. I mean, yeah.
people were paying those mortgages that were at 2.8% or 3% or whatever. They still, even after the housing crash in 2008, people went out and got more of those kinds of mortgages. And now the mortgage rates have doubled. Now,
Well,
what
since that,
happens to those things? Let me just say
yeah.
this. I know I'm running on, but this is a hot issue for me. What happens now when the Fed raises rates and you can't pay your mortgage and your house goes into default and goes back to the bank? That's called a transfer of wealth. The money you spent, and you may not realize this, I bring this up because in a lot of states, I don't know if it's national, but I know that if your house goes back to the bank in foreclosure, that there is a certain amount of money that you're entitled to. Say you owed $75,000 on a $300,000 house, that when that sells, anything above that $75,000 should be coming back to you.
Well, let me correct you
Keep
for
that
one,
in mind.
not correct you, but rephrase what you just said. You called it a
Okay.
transfer of wealth. I'd like to put an adjective in front of that and call it an engineered transfer of wealth. How's
Excellent.
that? Okay,
Yeah.
right.
Yes.
Now,
Yes. That's what's going on. So don't beat yourself up. Just start thinking because there are
Well,
some things
here's
that
another
you
thing to
can
think
do.
about, Suzette. Okay, in one of my past lives, I was a finance guy. I was a CFO. Okay. And I do understand the whole capital equipment procurement. Now, you got to remember, capital equipment and debt lending to support capital equipment, there's a certain hurdle rate that you have to hit to make sure that that purchase of that equipment or building or whatever it is, a tractor, a truck, a machine, it doesn't matter, capital equipment, that it passed a certain hurdle rate in order for you to make financial sense of that purchase. Well, part of that hurdle rate has to factor in the cost of money. And now if you're paying 7%, let's say, versus 3%, your hurdle rate is a lot higher. And guess what happens? Well, what happens is you don't make a lot of capital purchases. Okay, all right, fine. That means the economy's not going to grow. Okay. Now, unemployment's going to ensue. But let's just talk about a piece of capital equipment, Suzette. Let's just talk about a tractor. Okay. Let's say you're a farmer. Okay. When you make a tractor, and I've visited John Deere and Caterpillar and all these different companies that make tractors. And I'm just using tractor as an example. It could be any piece of equipment. Let's just talk about that tractor. That tractor has probably 100 or 200 suppliers that supply parts. Somebody makes the tires. Caterpillar and John Deere do not make the tires. They buy them. Okay.
Right.
Well, okay. What about the engine components? What about this? What about that? Okay. All of these things now that we procure, it's not only, okay, we're gonna now lay off people at John Deere or at Caterpillar. But that one person, that for every one person that gets laid off, you're probably looking at 8 to 12 additional people that are going to lose their jobs because of the supply base of the people that have to make the components or won't be making the components anymore. In addition to that, Suzette, the commerce around these businesses, like
Are you back?
yeah, I'm back. Like hotels, hotels, restaurants, okay, and the like, right? Traffic in terms of trains, buses, airplanes, all of that, it has a radiating effect for that one person losing their job making that tractor, okay? It's a huge, huge, huge thing. So the fact that the Fed is raising interest rates, it will, if that's the only metric they're looking at, then it will kill this economy. It will create unemployment. It will create I hate to say it, suicides. It will create more crime because people are more desperate. The ill effects of the Federal Reserve are a lot more far-reaching than just money, okay? And when you look at this, and when these companies can't make their hurdle rates and don't decide to buy or put off that piece of capital equipment, it has a magnified effect across a broad spectrum of people. And that's what people sometimes miss. Oh, geez, you know, XYZ Corporation just laid off 1,000 people. No, indirectly, they laid off probably 10 or 12,000 people because of the supply base that supports them. So it's a really big deal. And I kind of look at this whole Federal Reserve, and you heard me say this before, Suzette. It's like, you know, somebody beats their dog, but now they want credit for taking them to the vet. Hey, look what I'm doing. I'm saving my dog. I'm taking him to the vet. But you're the one that caused the injury on the dog. Well, that's
and as ugly as that example is, that's how ugly the Fed is.
And I make it ugly like that because, first of all, everybody for has their heart bleeding for pets, right? And I want it to be that ugly because that's what it is. This Federal Reserve, and I'm going to go on a limb and say this, but they're killing people.
Oh, okay? Every time the unemployment rate goes up by 1%, there are 40,000 additional deaths worldwide.
Yeah. And by the way, you go back to the 2008 housing collapse. You go back to the Jimmy Carter years. You go back to the Depression, which was prolonged 10 years by FDR by just euphorically, you know, doing what we're just talking about, the 1920 stock market crash and all the other ones in between. These recessions, depressions, Suzette, are directly related to, if you want to do root cause problem solving analysis, the root cause is the Federal Reserve, okay?
Yes.
Who are designed to have supposedly stabilize and grow our economy. So now you think about this and you say to yourself, geez, are these broken promises? What a great name for an episode.
They are. And I think let's leave it there, Mark, because you bring, you know, I think we've explained inflation and we've explained the role of the Fed in creating inflation.
Yep.
And the secrecy surrounding the Fed, their unwillingness to allow a congressional audit, which we should be, if they're in such great, you know, private, public partnership with us, then we should be able to know what the heck's going on. So
I agree. So
there are many aspects to this problem, and we're going to be addressing them all as we learn more. You know, we're going to be sharing more.
Yeah, and I think one of the episodes that you and I are going to do down the line, one of the other Federal Reserve episodes is going to be called "Follow the Money." Okay.
Yes.
Well, matter of fact, almost in everything, whenever you see something crazy going on with your government, look at the money trail first. Okay. I don't care if it's DEI. If it's racism, if it's Black Lives Matter, if it's
war,
oh, big time in war, follow the money, the military industrial complex. So that's always a really good way to kind of understand how could they be doing that? Follow the money. Now, I guess when you start looking at the Federal Reserve, One thing is that the way the law was written, Congress can't amend it or they can abolish the Federal Reserve. They do have that ability in the 1913 law that was written. But I don't see anybody besides people like Rand Paul, you know, coming up.
Thomas Massey.
Okay.
There's the Freedom Caucus, which is a small group. Are they just Republicans or are there some Democrats?
Yeah, they are. Well, when I was running for Congress, I met with Mark Meadows. And he asked me if I got elected, would I join the Freedom Caucus, because he knew my politics being conservative. And I asked him this question. I said, Mark, I said, can you ask me? At the time, there were like 40 people in the Freedom Caucus, which is kind of sad because we had a couple hundred Republicans in, but only 40 were in this thing called the Freedom Caucus. I said, how is it that you guys in the Freedom Caucus could vote for any budget put out by any president? I don't care who it is. because most of the spending in these budgets are unconstitutional. So if you took an oath to uphold the Constitution, how could you vote yes on any budget that gets passed? Okay. And he just looked at me and said, well, you know, it's a thing of compromise. And he gave me some kind of answer. But at the end of the day, if the block of 40 congressmen said no, we get something done. Okay. But everybody has their thing. Now, let me just tell you one more thing that happened with me a couple of weeks ago. I was at a political conference, political meeting for the Fountain Hills Republican Club. Fountain Hills is a town in Arizona just outside of Scottsdale. And Sheriff Joe Arpaio, who is a good friend of mine, asked me to come to this. He was speaking at it. And Sheriff Joe and I were sitting at the front table. I'd say there's probably around 300 people in this conference. You know, Carrie Lake came in and she spoke and all this. Well, David Schweikert, who is my congressman in District 1 here in Arizona, who's a Republican, by the way, got up there and started decrying the pain that everybody's feeling because of inflation. He started decrying the pain that everybody's feeling because, and he said, you know, our debt is now $35 trillion. Our interest on the debt, he claims, is $1.2 trillion, blah, 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 blah. Okay, now, so I, when it came to questions and answers, I was the first one he picked on. They gave me the microphone. I said, Congressman Schweikert, we all know that inflation, the definition of inflation, is an expansion of the money supplied by the Federal Reserve. And he agreed. Now, he fancies himself as being this big political financial wizard with all his charts. And if you ever watch his thing on YouTube, he show you all these charts and graphs and all this stuff. Okay. He goes, yes, it is. The inflation is that, which results in high prices at the grocery store. Said, yes, it does. Okay. I said, then the money that gets printed when they create the expansion of the money supply, they buy treasury bills, which ends up being our debt. Now we got to pay that debt back with interest, and there's your $1.2 trillion that you're talking about. Yes, that's exactly right. Okay, and I heard your rhetoric, I said, about how you're decrying the debt position that we have and the interest and the, but correct me if I'm wrong, Congressman, wasn't it you who voted to increase the debt ceiling? And he got angry, right, with me. Well, and he said, yes, I did. Yes, I did, but let me ask you a question, he said. What do you think would happen to the bond market if we didn't do that? I said, well, look, Congressman, I'm not here to answer your...
The bond market is not his business. His business is supposed to be running the country.
I said, look, Congressman, I said, I'm not here to answer your questions. Okay, you're the one that took... You're taking questions. But I think the people in this room and the people in your district are more concerned about the supermarket than they are the bond market. Okay, and he didn't like that.
Well, you were absolutely right.
Then he went on to say, do you know we saved $100 billion of spending by increasing the debt ceiling? Really, $100 billion on a $5 or $6 trillion budget that he's promoting, that Biden's promoting? That's a drop in the bucket. That's chump change. And then he closed by saying this, chump change, huh? I just wish everybody knew how to use a calculator. Next question. He was dismissive in that regard. I don't care if he's Republican or not. I'm holding this guy's feet to the fire because he's one of the reasons why this country's going down the tubes. I'm sorry. And I don't care what party you're in.
You're absolutely right. Like when they want to do something like fund a war in a different country, okay, regardless of all the details of that, then every American will spend $20,000 on that $91 billion that they just created out of thin air.
Yeah, yeah.
So they could just say, hey, all of you pro-war people that want to have, you know, want to fund this war and think that the Ukraine boundary, you know, is more important than your own, that think that the Ukraine, what's happening there is like no problem, then take up a collection, right? Send a check for $20,000 if you want to chip in. But to put that on us, especially when we're in such terrible shape financially, is just
Hey,
I think
look,
it's treasonous. I call it
everybody,
treason. I mean, because it's
it
hurting
is.
a lot of families. There are a lot of families. There are a lot of kids that aren't eating and aren't eating enough. There are a lot of I can't. Can you imagine not being able to feed your family, Mark? You know,
No,
and because you
no.
don't, because you haven't taken the time to grasp, what's going on. You don't even understand what's going on because you went through the government schools and nobody ever, and nothing ever really got your attention. Like you never really noticed that somebody was lying to you. You didn't see the cracks,
Connected the dots, right? You didn't
you
connect the
know?
dots. I went to India 4 times last year, Suzette, and I look at that country and the poverty there that shouldn't be, but it is. And if you look around the world at all these different countries I've been to and not been to, and where there's this abject poverty, right? It's all government generated. There is not one bit of poverty in this world that can't be laid at the feet of their government. Okay. And I don't give a damn what you say. You'll never convince me otherwise. And when I start looking at what you're just talking about here, that's the path we're on. And that's the path they want. Okay. So go back to our Marxism episode that we did, the Communist Manifesto in episode 11, and listen to that one. Okay. Listen to that one. Listen to the fourth episode 9 on the military industrial complex, what Suzette was alluding to in terms of how we're spending money. People are getting rich off of war. People are getting rich out of people being sick, and people are being rich by expanded federal government. And they're in each one of those. There is no incentive, Suzette, on any one of those to do the opposite thing. And the only people who are suffering is the American people. Everybody else is winning.
What you're talking about, you're absolutely right, Mark. And to just reinforce what you're saying about people are getting rich on people getting sick,
Right.
the number one money earner in this country is our hospitals. 1.5 trillion last year is what hospitals earned. The energy business, if you add all the energy stuff, oil, gas, solar, the whole kit and caboodle, a half a trillion. But
There you
hospitals,
go. There you
1.5
go.
trillion. And I would encourage you to show me one person that 5 years out of the hospital for a serious illness is doing better. Show me one. How well are hospitals
Suzette,
really doing?
I happen to know, we could sit here, and I know, and you're a nurse, so you've got more war stories than I do, but I happen to know in the military with the VA, and also non-military people who are not here today because of medical malpractice. And I have to think sometimes that some of the errors that they made were so obvious that you got to sometimes think this is by design, right? And so. And by the way, these people were strung along on regiments that cost a lot of money, that made people a lot of money, that were not needed, but eventually ended up killing them, right? As opposed to
Yes.
doing the right thing to begin with, right? So we can go on and on about that, but I would ask, people to really hold our representatives, like I did with Schweikert, accountable. Okay, don't let them say one thing while they're doing something else. And I don't really care if they're Republican or not. It doesn't matter
Doesn't
to me.
matter.
I'm an American. I'm a constitutionalist, and I want to go back, Suzette, to the reason we are doing this podcast. It's called The Constitution Solution, One Podcast Under God, because we really believe that if we followed the Constitution, most of these problems that we're talking about would go away. The unjust wars, the institution of sickness in our food and in our medicine, in diseases, the expansion of the federal government, most of which is unconstitutional. Okay, if we follow the darn Constitution, and is it a perfect document? No, but the founders gave us remedies to continue to evolve it. But at the end of the day, I say that most of our problems go away, Suzette, if we follow the Constitution. And we're not doing that. And there's a lot of other ways that we're not with the fourth branch of government. That was episode 8. I was talking to Congressman Gosar about emergency spending bills, which are outside the purview of Congress. I might try to get Congressman Gosar Those are on and all these things are Venn diagrams. Is that you look at the border, China, the economy, the military industrial complex, the emergency spending bills. We're still doing the spending emergency spending bill that has something to do with Gaddafi. He's been dead for how many years? Hillary killed him. Okay, so when you look at all of these things that are going on, it ties back, Suzette, to the episode that you and I did on Robert Welch. Was Robert Welch right? He was the founder of the John Birch Society, and all the tenets that he wrote in his blue book in 1958 have come true. Okay, so you got to look at this, and there's a bigger play going on here, and most of us out there who are fighting whatever cause we're fighting for are, I hate to be insulting, but we're useful idiots to the communists and to the globalists. And that's what's going on here. Okay. So the elites are winning. The elites are getting rich. We are getting poorer. As an American people, we're getting sicker. Okay. And we're sending our people off to war to die. And that has a radiating effect on the families. I know, because I lost my son, as you know. In Afghanistan, a war we should have never been fighting.
And think
And
of Scott, who didn't die,
Scott,
the
yep.
impact this had
Well, the
on
people that
Scott.
did not, right? By
Oh
the
my
way,
gosh.
when I was
I was.
in Connecticut this past week for Memorial Day services for my son, we met a guy named Manny who lost his arm. And you know, the town actually got together and with this one organization and built him a house. And he's there now. He's got a little baby, and he got a wife. And I actually bought him breakfast. He didn't know it, but I paid for his breakfast when I left. But he, you know,
Nice.
he has no arm. Okay, he came back with no arm. The psychological and the physical impact. Scott is still suffering from neck and back injuries from the war that are plaguing him probably for the rest of his life. And so, it's just not good. It's just not good. And Suzette, when I met you on the campaign trail, I met so many people in the district that were just crying for help. Help us, help us, please help us. Help me, Mark. What are you going to do? And I would tell them, don't put your faith in the government. Don't put your faith in me.
It has to
Okay.
be each of us.
Get
Each of us.
educated. Yes.
We can do things, you know, and also, and we could talk forever. But what I'm thinking of, the last thing I'm going to contribute to this conversation is that if you can live without a credit card, just use your debit card or use cash, that's one thing that you can do to help curb the appetites at the Fed. You can, you know, get if you need something, sell stuff. Sell something you can that you think you can get some money for in your house if you need to. I'm serious. You know, try not to borrow money and try not to create money by using credit. If you can't afford it and you don't absolutely need it, forego it. It's okay. It's okay to not have the latest, greatest, whatever. You know, so that's what I would encourage people to do. You know, save your money to buy something. You would be shocked at what a cashier looks like when you pay with cash because you've been saving for 3 years and you're
Okay.
buying like, you
So,
know, when I bought my chair, they couldn't believe it that I was paying cash.
with
They
a
were
public
like,
education system, no, don't expect the accurate change back,
oh, you have to have accurate change. I had it to
but
the penny. They couldn't believe it. The woman looked at me. She goes,
oh, that's funny.
"That's awesome. That's unbelievable."
Hey,
And I
Suzette,
thought,
by the
"I've
way,
been."
all these other things we talked about with the military industrial complex, the other one not to forget is this whole welfare state that we did in episode
Oh,
22.
yeah.
That welfare state has such unbelievable negative effects on our country. So all these things tie together. Okay. So
Yes.
anyway, all right, let's end it there because we can't go on forever. We're going to do more Federal Reserve episodes. Suzette, you said we're going to be doing one called Follow the Money. Okay. Which will show you how these people do enrich themselves. Okay. And, we're also going to do one on emergency spending, what's going on outside the authority of the U.S. Congress, who's supposed to generate all spending bills. This emergency spending is like, I think Congressman Gosar, Paul Gosar, told me there's like 41 active right now that they're using to fund all kinds of things that we don't know about. Okay. So there's a lot more to talk about. I think, hopefully this broken promise is the Federal Reserve is not your friend. The Federal Reserve are the root causes of all of our economic collapses, including the one that we are going to go through. We are going to see a big recession, I believe, over the
We're
next
in
year.
it.
Yeah, I think we'll see what the GDP numbers come out. It already declined once in the first quarter. And now, if it declines again, that's the official definition of a recession. Although Biden, when it happened under his watch, redefined what a recession was. Okay. They redefined all
He's
kinds
such
of
a
things. Like,
genius.
yeah, I know. And see, I got taught wrong in college when I took all these economic courses, But I should have had Biden as my professor. Yeah, so there we are, right? So
Okay.
a lot more to talk about. Oh my God. But guys, pay attention out there. There's a lot. Maybe we might have one thing we'll do on our website, Suzette, putting some of the good podcasts out there that you and I listen to that nobody hears about, getting away from the Charlie Kirks of the world and all the people that are
Huh.
trying to make college kids look stupid. Let's just start putting the ones out there that have a lot of meaning, like Victor Davis Hanson and some others that you've been following. And maybe we'll do that. We'll put that on the website so we can
I
re
think
refer.
that's a really great, I think that's a really great idea. And I think I personally, I'm
Educated.
thinking of my nephews now who are one in college, one just graduated from high school, and one is will be a sophomore next year. And they're great kids. They're not stupid. They're
But they don't
brilliant.
know. But they
They're
don't know.
brilliant. No, but well, they, you know, they're really smart kids or paying attention. They don't do stupid stuff. They're straight A students athletically and scholastically. It's very unusual, you know. But there are, so we do have, I have a lot of hope in the future because I know that there are a lot of kids, there are kids that are paying attention. And they know, I know my oldest is, he's definitely into political science and I think he understands, you know, I'll see him next week and I can't wait to like find out what's going on.
Well, we're gonna end up, we're being manipulated, and I look back to when I was in elementary school, and I remember they would have nuclear or atomic bomb drills where we would have to get under our desks. Think about that. First of all, if an A bomb went off or a nuclear bomb went off, the desks aren't going to help you. But it scared the crap out of us, and that was all by design, I believe it was. We're going home, and the fear of God was put into us that there was a boogeyman out there that we had to fight. And that's one thing that Marxism does is they create a boogeyman that justifies all this unconstitutional spending. We did it with Saddam Hussein, the Gulf of Tonkin in Vietnam. We did it with Afghanistan. All these boogeymen that we create, Gaddafi, and all of a sudden, they're going to come after us and they're going to take our food off our table. No, it's the government that's taking the food off the table.
The World Economic Forum, one of their list of goals is to keep us in perma-stress or perma-fear. Because when you're in fear, you're literally, your brain, the ability to remember is reduced, and your fear, the fear factor gets replaced by another fear, by another fear, by
Didn't
another
that
fear.
happen during COVID, Suzette?
Oh. I mean, that was the purpose was to terrify us. And this is why, for those of you that are Christian, you know that in the Bible, God says, fear not. Jesus says, fear not. It
Right.
almost like 400 times. He's constantly telling us not to
Well, one
be.
of the tenets of Marxism that we talked about the World Economic Forum. Again, I'll take you back to episode, where is it? 11, which is the Communist Manifesto. And remember that these guys, Klaus Schwab at the World Economic Forum, thinks that China is the model. Oh, there you go. The people should read that, by the way, the Communist Manifesto. If you're not watching on
On
YouTube,
Amazon.
Suzette held up the Communist Manifesto. You need to read that, okay? Not because we're promoting it as being right, but you need to understand what these guys are doing. And in the episode 11, I parallel the tenets of the Communist Manifesto to what's going on in our own federal government today, and there's a carbon copy of what's going on. Okay. And so remember, Klaus Schwab, they had a couple of neat sayings. One was, you'll have less and like it. And they also said they think we should model our form of government around China. Okay. That's, if that's not enough to give you the chills, okay, then I don't know. I'm done. I can't help you.
I'll add one more thing. Klaus Schwab is stepping down supposedly in 2025 from his position as the leader of the World Economic Forum. He needs permission from the Swiss government to do so.
Don't get me going. Davos.
So I'm just saying.
As a matter of fact, they call it a manifesto. Davos Manifesto is what it's called.
Yeah.
Okay. The Davos. Am I saying that right? Davos.
So much
Davos.
For neutrality, right?
Yeah.
So much
yeah.
For neutrality. Well, anyway. Look,
we can go on to please be vigilant. That's all we're asking you guys to do out there, to listen to this and listen to other things that are out there. Be vigilant and really understand what's going on here. And, you know, Suzette and I are going to do our best to kind of bring you, as they used to say at the old TV show Dragnet, the facts, ma'am. Just give me the facts.
Fear not. Fear not, said the Lord.
Yeah. And I'll leave you on a humorous note. I have a riddle for you, Suzette. How do you starve a Biden supporter?
Oh, how do you starve a Biden supporter?
You hide his food stamps in his work boots.
Oh. There are a lot of people that get food stamps. And food stamps, that's another one of those scams. Don't get me started, Mark. Food stamps, if you went down and applied for food stamps, they might give you $200 a month, maybe $180. I have a friend that had to. Yep. And she was really in a desperate situation. And her allotment would have been something like $86 a month. So food stamps is another scam. Where
yes, it is.
They make it seem like all this money is being given away, but it's not enough. It's enough to keep you like from starving to death, but it's not.
My mom was born in 1915, and her first husband passed away from cancer at an early age, and he left her with two young kids, and she was on welfare. Okay. The state of Connecticut welfare social worker, I guess, would come in monthly to inspect her home, and she would take a glove, a white glove, and run it on top of her cabinets to see if it was dirt there. Okay. And one day she opened up the cupboard and there was a can of Maxwell House coffee, right? Good to the last drop. Remember that? And she said, if I come back and find coffee in here again, you're going to lose your benefits. Okay. Because that's not an allowed expenditure. So when we moved my mom out of her home after my father died, we were cleaning out of her basement and she had about 20 cans of Maxwell House coffee. She didn't hoard anything else, just that. Okay. It was a subliminal thing, I think, that she did, right? Kind of like her security blanket, right? So, you know, that was I'm telling this story because it's an interesting story psychologically, but it's also representative of what was versus what you can do today on welfare.
Well, and the tyranny of the state. Why, you know, the tyranny
exactly.
of the state, you know, it's one thing to do a home check to make sure that children are eating. It's quite another to tell a grown woman to make sure her house is clean enough. And that she
that was
can't
the standards.
Find a can
you know,
of
it was
coffee.
A different era. It was a different era.
I didn't think it's awful.
But it was, yeah, well, you know, I agree, but
yep.
That's the way
I
it
mean,
was.
I mean, you know, I get your point, but the counterpoint to that is. Anyway,
well,
let's just
again,
hope
it's,
we never
it's,
have
it's,
to have the state, never invite the state into your life is the
good point. It's tyranny in a different format. That's all that was.
Yeah.
Right. So
here's
yeah,
this
you're right.
Worker.
You're right. You're right.
You know, she's given a little power and she's like that Milner report, you know, the Milner study where they had college students, they were brought into a room and they were told they were doing an experiment on pain and they were told to shock people. Okay. They could hear the people screaming in the next room. They couldn't see them. They could just hear them. They had actors in the next room and they had a guy in a white coat standing there telling him to turn it up, do it you know, press the button longer. The person on the other side of the thing is pleading with them to stop. No one, I think maybe one, two people walked away and said, screw you. The rest of them did what they were told, and even to the point of killing a person.
Well, look, Dr. Jordan B. Peterson talked, I know we're getting a little bit off subject from the Federal Reserve, but he says that all these woke people out there who would have stopped Nazism and all that, you probably would have become one of the guards. Okay.
Oh, yeah. It's okay. Look at what's going on. Well, yeah. Yes.
Anyway.
Oh, that's what Milner showed. Anyway, okay.
Okay, you didn't like my food stamp joke. You should have laughed harder, but maybe
I'm
we'll
sorry.
Do a retake. Okay, Suzette, thanks a lot. Okay, we're going to come back with a lot more on this stuff. Again, we dove into a lot of different subjects in the last 20 minutes, but that's because all of this is related. Everything here is related to each other, and we just need to be vigilant and push back on our representatives and call them out, like I did with Schweikert.
Oh, yeah.
When he starts, you know, and we got to continue to do that. So, Suzette Lawrence, thank you very much. We'll see you next time.
Always
and,
a pleasure.
I'm Mark DeLuzio. This was episode 26, Federal Reserve II, Broken Promises. I hope you guys can see now that why we called it Broken Promises. Okay. I think you'll now understand why are you paying so much for that bag of potato chips. Okay. And it's going to go up, by the way. So don't, you can count on that. So it's not going to go down. So until next time, we'll see you then. Thanks.
Bye, everyone.
Thanks for listening to the Constitution Solution, one podcast under God, where we hold that strict adherence to the Constitution is the solution to most of our country's problems.
You can find other episodes on our website at 1787solution.com, YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and most other platforms. We're your hosts, Mark DeLuzio and Suzette Lawrence. Until next time, may God bless you and may God bless America.